Good morning, everyone. We're opened up the door, so we're waiting to get most of the participants into the Zoom call. But I'll get started now. I see that my name is up, but my name is Laronda Papworth. I'm manager of tariff here at the ISO. And today we're going to be talking about our tool to help customers assess potential impact on their bills from the preferred rate design. So we're still adding people, few people. Today we're going to spend a little time flipping between our slide deck and Excel. So I just wanted to give people that are listening right now a heads up that it might be more beneficial if you had the Excel tool up on, if you have another monitor while we go through it today. We posted on our website the bill impact tool with sample data, and that's what I'll be using today to kind of walk through how to use it and some potential things you can do in there to assess. So I think we're kind of rounded up here to 55 participants, and we'll just start on the morning, and hopefully we could potentially give some time back if we are able to answer all your questions. So again, my name is Laronda Papworth. I'm manager of tariff here at the ISO. Claudia, if you can move to the first slide and slide deck. As usual, we just want to provide notice that this session is recorded and the details are on this slide. If you have concerns, please contact the director as it's outlined here before. On the next slide, this information provided here is for information purposes only. We're trying to do our best to provide evaluative tools. In the end, any rates that are charged will go through the commission and be vetted through that process. And this is a session, a tools, data to just help be, to be helpful. Next slide, we'll go over to Jordan, and Jordan can introduce himself.
Hi, everyone. Jordan Ludwig here again, Stack Consulting. I think we're all pros at this by now, but we'll go through it just in case. Today, if you do have questions for it, best way to do that is to raise your hand. That notifies me that you want to get into the fold, ask your question over on how the tool might actually work. So go ahead, hit that. It should be in your system tray. Let me know that you can find it. Thanks, Chris. I see you. Thanks, Paula, Dwayne. We're not brilliant. See a couple of people coming in. So at least 10% of people know how to use the tool. Maybe I need a new shtick to get people to engage and let me know that they need their know how to ask their questions for it. But, you can also use the Q&A to ask questions if there's something that's a bit more specific that you want to go through and ask. People have the ability to upvote those along the way. We'll be watching and monitoring both. We'll do our best to attend to the hands up first because I think that's a bit more of the interactive type of conversation, but we will be looking at both. I don't see anyone attended via a conference call, but for those of you that might be joining that way, and if you're new to joining that way, to raise your hand, you need to hit *9. There's one that's joined us now. So *9 lets us know that you'd like to raise your hand. You have something that you'd like to say or ask. We'll unmute you on our end. You'll have to hit *6 to unmute yourself, and then you'll be able to ask your question. I think we can move forward now. Claudia? Just again, rules of today for it. Hopefully this one being a bit more of an information session will come as much into play for it, but listen to and understand others' perspectives. We're going to balance for airtime as much as we can. Today is more informational, so I'm not sure how much these principles should take into hold, but we will adhere to them nonetheless. If we could move forward, please.
All right, and along with Jordan, we have a number of other ISO people, as well as Jordan's colleague Janice on the call, just supporting me here. We have Carla, who will be running things behind the scenes, and Claudia moving the slide deck and helping out in general, and as well as Spencer Halls here to maybe answer any quick questions that come up that I may not be able to answer. As well, what we outlined the objectives of this session a while ago, and it's just to help understand the impact and if and just walk people through what how the tool can assess the billing load data and determine a comparison between today's current design and the future preferred design, and as well as how to adjust your load information to see what the impact potentially could be as things could change in the future. We also want this session to be, like Jordan said, interactive. It'll be hopefully less of me talking at you and just walking through some things that we can do and getting your questions to me, and we can just walk through things that might just be some quick gaps that we could help fill in some understanding. And move to the next slide, on slide 8.
Maybe the only thing that I choose to add here, LaRonda, sorry to cut you off too, is we don't, today is not about going through and rehashing some of the rate design that was the conversation that we had last Thursday. So we'll absolutely entertain and be taking questions as it relates to the bill impact tool and helping people understand the implications for it. But we're not going to get into the why of certain rate design principles for things at this point. So just kind of putting those parameters around the day. Back to you, LaRonda.
So like I said, we're going to walk through the bill impact tool. I'll just give a brief overview in PowerPoint, and then we'll move to Excel. And if for those that weren't on the call when I was saying that it might be helpful if you have the Excel file open on your second screen, if that's possible, that might help you move through the tool a little bit easier than trying to follow me. We'll take Q&As throughout the PowerPoint as I kind of do a high-level walkthrough. But again, it might be more helpful to use the tool to answer those questions. So we'll hopefully leave a lot of time for that back and forth. Raise your hand, ask me questions, put questions into the Q&A. If things are, you know, lots of questions, good feedback, good discussion, and we get around the 10:45 mark and it's still continuing, we can take a quick break. I think that's helpful to everyone. And come back and finish questions that may have, and we'll close that and move on to your lunch break. So that's what we're looking to get through today. On the next slide, on slide 9, we have quite a few people registered today, and we want to be helpful to everyone and provide an opportunity for as many people as possible to ask questions. The whole list of participants today are listed here. And then we're going to move on to just a little setup of what's going to happen today. Oh, sorry, missed the engagement process. So this session is being held to assist us in our framework to ensure that stakeholders have a place to ask questions, to understand that we're being transparent and timely and meaningful. So I hope this session today leads to, you know, advanced understanding of impacts and tools that we can use to assess impacts. So we, again, like I said, just transparently trying to be really helpful to understand, and that there'd be no questions about, I really don't understand how this works. How come my load profile shows this kind of a result, and walk through those sort of examples. And then these are tools. We're trying to make the tools very easy to use, easy for a broad group of stakeholders. And as well, we're on version 3. We, you know, certainly understand we're not perfect in our first release, and we'll find issues and improvements that can be recommended to us. So we're moving forward. We'll just continue to make those improvements and design tools that are really helpful and useful. The next slide. Just a timeline of this whole process. And again, we're here in March 2021. It's been a busy week or so. So I know we've thrown a lot of information at you. And hopefully this morning can be just instead of, again, like I said, not me talking at you. So we'll try to get through to the tool as soon as possible, but just more interactive and hopefully getting some aha moments. So this is the sort of the background as we move towards the tool, sort of the assumptions that we've used and included in the tool. On slide 15. This is a slide we presented last Thursday, and it just an overview of what numbers are included in this bill impact. And what we really wanted to do when we compare today's design with a future design is to isolate for the one change that we're making. So in that regards, we're holding revenue requirement the same across both designs. We're using billing determinants, so the total units that we can collect the costs from don't change between the two, today's design and a future design. We've included bulk and regional charges, as well as some other items that are included in rate DTS, so that we can do a total transmission bill impact. And as well, we've included the total bill impact including energy settlement charges. We've made no changes or assumptions to how people's behavior could change from the past to the future. Right now, it's just looking at a current load profile or an average or any one of the last 5 years and just assess the change. And as well, like, these are test rates. We've used test information. They would no way exactly match what would happen in the future, just as we move closer to actual revenue requirement, forecast billing determinants, et cetera. On slide 16, just kind of laid out the assumptions. We presented the percentages last Thursday, but just to be clear, we have about $2.3 billion to be collected through this rate. And we've used the billing determinants I've listed here that were actual 2019 billing determinants. So how many coincident meter demand megawatts we have to collect the first charge, the coincident meter demand charge, and then the billing capacity megawatts, as well as the energy. On slide 17, I just wanted to go back, and I think this is helpful because we're really going to dive a little deep into calculating rates. And we talked about the ISO moving to maybe a 1 hour interval for determining the coincident meter demand. So that was the last bullet point, the timing of the highest coincident meter demand to move from hourly from 15 minute interval. And we said it provides participants more transparent information. And I spent a little time over the last few days digging into that a little bit more and reminding myself of a few items. And we have the operating reserve supplement that's provided in an hourly format. We also have the meter volumes report on the ISO webpage that's you can download the CSV data for hourly for every type of settlement zone, I think it is. And that's hourly as well. And we feel that there is more transparent tools. Those are two data points that we can get for hourly that we do not have for 15 minute. And I just wanted to clarify that highest meter demand in the billing in the rate DTS to calculate your billing capacity and your other support services charge is using a 15-minute interval as well. So moving down to the bill impact tool. So I'm on slide 19. And this is where I'll just walk through PowerPoint. I don't have my Excel open yet. I'm not sharing it. But if you did want to spend some time going to this path here to download the bill impact tool version 0.3 with sample data, that'll help you follow along today. And let's hear some improvements you would like to see. We're definitely open to make the tool even more helpful than it is currently.
Rhonda, I just see a hand up from Colette. Can we get Colette unmuted and just get your question here, Colette?
Thanks, Jordan. It's Colette Chakurta with the ADC. Just a question on the move to the hour for the coincident peak demand time versus the 15-minute interval. Has the ISO looked at this change to an hour, and would it have changed the timing of the coincident peaks from what they, were to, perhaps a different settlement hour in the past?
Let me get back to you on that, Colette. I don't have the exact data in front of me, but we have done some review of that. And there are certainly some hours when you look back over 5 years times 12 months, there's a few where the interval would change. But I'm recollecting here, it's a very small percentage, but there is a change in some months.
Okay, thanks. The curiosity is really about how the bill impact might change too. Like, you may not have avoided it an hour if it was at a different time, and that might have some impact, or you may have avoided it anyways, okay. thanks for that.
Okay. Thanks, Claude. Go ahead, Laronda.
All right, so moving to, I just have some disclaimers, I guess, on slide 20. And maybe I won't walk through it all, but you know, this tool is not authoritative. It's for information purposes only. We're using a very simple Excel spreadsheet. We use feedback we receive from some of the tools we provided in October, where we want to see 5 years data. We want to be able to adjust potentially some of our load profile information. And also the feedback was that it was a challenge for some stakeholders to get their data. So we've tried to be really open and be as helpful as we can. I understand there's limitations. The ISO only has access to a certain level of data, and we're really trying to be helpful there and seeing, you know, with support from the DFOs to help customers that may be looking at downstream impacts on their bills. On slide 21, I'll just, if you've opened the tool, and I mean, I do have it open, but let me just speak to what essentially the tool is. There is an information tab to in case your very first time opening it, it should provide you some background. And down on the bottom, you should be able to see some version history, some of the fixes that we've come along as we move from 1, 2 to 3. But on the site data input tab, that's where you would start and paste into Excel your values for historical coincident meter demand, energy billing capacity, highest meter demand. And we do really rely on the site-specific dollars charges that rather than recalculating them again in the tool, we just pull the dollars and use those dollars to determine some pretty important factors for your bill calculation. We also have rate primary service credit, and this is applied to sites who do not utilize transmission facility owner facilities. And this would reduce your pod charges. So it won't impact Vulcan Regional, but when we do percent impact, it would impact that. So that calculation is necessary to be included in there. And again, we continue to provide the data directly from our billing system for ISO transmission connected customers. I think we're up to date on providing all the data requested to us. And if it is a distribution connected customer, we need to work with the DFOs to understand the impact there. And moving to slide 22. So now once you pasted your values, your load profile information into the site data tab, we go over to the annual summary, and there shouldn't be any other work you need to do for this tab. You should see the impacts. It'll show you 5 years of history of undercurrent design charges, preferred design, a summary, and then there's a section where you can do some adjustments. But right at the top, it should outline who the market participant is. So this will either be if it's an ISOConnect customer, your direct ID, or it'll be a DFO. The site description is a description that the ISO has inside of our billing system. And an account ID is our transmission account ID that we settle the bills on. We've also provided this test to just test no or yes, whether the percent impact meets the threshold for targeted mitigation engagement. And so explain that if the average of the 4 years, 16, 17 through 20, is higher than 10%, that'll be yes, or if 2019 load profile year is yes. So there's three questions. Should I look at them now, or I just wanted to get a sense of how much is detail and how much is overview questions?
Well, let's take a look. I'll tee up the first one for you. One's just a kudos for you, some appreciation for doing these types of sessions, Laronda. I'd go to Horst's question next. On slide 16, can we take a look back there and just understand that the actual percentages? And I see the request for one more decimal place, Horst. If you do want to come online, can you let us know where you see the discrepancy?
Hello?
Oh, on energy.
Hey, okay. We can hear you.
Yeah. Good morning. Sorry, this is not a big deal because I think everybody probably figured it out that we weren't charging 22% on energy under the current tariff. I think that's supposed to be the 7% from the number above, if I recall correctly. I've been using these percentages for some other stuff, which is why I thought, well, in case you are updating the slide now that there was a little mistake, maybe you can add a decimal place that would help me. But I mean, if not, it's also not a big deal.
Okay. Thanks, Urs. Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. And just for everyone's benefit, can we just recap? It sounds like the billing capacity and the energy cost in the 2019 test year backwards. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Brilliant. For everyone's record. So the other question I'd look to you, Laurent, it's a question from Duane on clarification for what is actually included within the test years.
So when you, the input site data mainly is annual metering, annual billing determinants. So coincident meter demand would be the sum of all the megawatts you were charged for 12 CP throughout a whole year. So that's what coincident meter demand, sum of the annual with the billing determinants would be. Maximum highest meter demand would have been the maximum charge in throughout the year. And we needed that to calculate billing capacity. Actual highest meter demand would be the sum of all the highest meter demands in the year. So it's a mix. The max is the max, CMD and actual HMD are the sum.
So is that a yes to all three of Duane's kind of clarifications? We need all three of those within the tool?
Yes, we do.
Duane, let us know if you've got kind of a follow-up into there, but otherwise we'll continue to plot on.
Okay, so we're going to move to slide 23.
Just one other question while we're taking questions here, LaRonda. Can we get Jeff unmuted? Hi, Jeff.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
It's Jeff Bork from the Alberta Utilities Commission. If you could just go back one slide. Two slides, I guess, or wherever the billing determinants were that were used for the test year, or was that a slide forward? I just wanted to, and this isn't not wholly fair to LaRonda, but I happen to have the 2019 DAR open, and I was looking at the 2019 recorded billing determinants, and I just wanted to clarify. So when you put down, for example, 59,687, does that include FTS? Or is this just DTS? Because the 2019 DAR, which is 25768, Exhibit 2, just has a slightly different number. So I just want to make sure that we're clear about whether or not FTS is included or not included in this.
And I think it's slide 16, Claudia. Is this the one, Jeff?
Yes, that's correct. The 2019 actual billing determinants. I just, and again, it's not fair to you, but maybe there's a place where we can double check and say, yeah, that should reflect what's in the DAR, or here's where the discrepancy may lie. So
yeah, I want to be as helpful here as possible. I can't exactly remember for DTS and FTS.
That's fine. I recognize this is a slightly unfair, but I just want to make sure that they're consistent across all places where possible. So again, I don't want us to, want this to be too big of a speed bump. I just wanted to raise that. Thank you.
There's always the chance that there's a billing adjustment occurred since the 2019 DAR. So these billing determinants, as you know, are never final, especially 1 year later.
Thanks.
And either way, we'll take a look and kind of understand that question a little bit further as well. So thanks, Jeff. So on to 23 then, LaRonda, is that correct?
Yes. So we just provided a graph on the summary tab to help get a quick visual representation to show the impact across the 5 years and the average, as well as we'll play around with that purple area in a little bit in Excel. And then on slide 24, it's just showing the numbers behind the graph and trying to just provide a fairly good summary. So if you see an impact in 1 year that may be a little bit larger than other years percentage-wise, you could determine, like, is it due to the coincident meter the annual coincident peak megawatts, or is it the energy? What is really causing that difference when I compare all the years? On slide 25, just below the total bills. Oh, that's one part I should have just highlighted again. Sorry, Claudia, can you go back to slide 24? Tried to keep clear that the sort of a color code, the blue is the transmission cost. So this includes your bulk regional pod, the other components of rate DTS, which include voltage control, other service support services charge, transmission constraint rebalancing charge. A few of those little smaller items are part of this, as well as if there is an impact from rate primary service credit on the pod charges. So that's what we're calling the transmission cost impact. And if we go down to slide 25, and where you see the more green theme is the total bill. So this will include the energy settlement costs as part of the total bill impact. Like as we outlined on Thursday, traditionally when we file the bill impact with the commission, this is the measurement used. As well, if you're going to do some adjustments on energy, it would flow through to this bill. So we felt it'd be helpful to provide both. On slide 26, and this is, so everything we've said, all we've done is pasted in data and then just watched it change in the annual summary tab. So where you can actually adjust and I guess use the power of the tool is on the adjust the load profile tab. And I'll just quickly walk through because probably more helpful to use Excel, but you can change which consumption year you want to test on. So if you don't think 2019 is representative, there should be a drop-down list and you can change to another year to test on. And then the next step I would do is go to the override section. So that's try to keep these colors consistent, the purple section. So over on the left of the spreadsheet, there'll be the volumes that we pulled from your actual load profile, the actual billing system. So billing quantity A through L were pulled directly from our billing system. And all those values, just a straight pullover. And then over to the right, you can start making adjustments. So you instead of relying on actual highest meter demand that may have occurred in 2019, you can adjust or contract. You want to adjust your contract capacity, raise or lower your load factor. You can do that to adjust the volumes that we'll use to use it, create this adjusted year. And I know Jordan's going to poke me to say, what are these factors? And so there's two factors we've included in the tool, the coincident meter demand factor. So that is your, I'm just going to quickly confirm where I say something that we've just used the factor of your coincident meter demand, total megawatts in the year, as in relation to your total highest meter demand megawatt volumes. So for this sample site, 247 divided by 337 gives you about 73%. And you can see how a change in that type of billing determinant has a large role in looking at impacts as we move to the preferred tariff design. So that's the coincident meter demand factor. And then the other one we have is metered energy or load factor. And so that's basically the relationship between the amount of energy that was taken in the period divided by your maximum meter demand times the hour. So if you took your maximum highest meter demand for the entire year, you'd be 100% load factor. So this site, pretty high on load factor. They're at 84%. So those are the two numbers I'll probably refer to a number of times, load factor and coincident meter demand factor. So now I'm going to go back up to under the override section. We can see we can change the monthly average highest meter demand. So in response to the tariff signals being sent through the preferred design, if that needs to be adjusted, you can do that. And you could adjust your average coincident meter demand. So instead of 20.6 megawatts on average each month, let's say you're going to go down to something else, you can do that. And you can change your contract capacity. It shouldn't actually be an or, it's an and. You can change your contract capacity and you can change your load factor or your average metered energy, whichever way you're more comfortable in thinking about consumption at your site. And I'll just quickly talk a few little things that come out of the tool. We use your actual operating reserve charges to determine that percentage. So that 6.45% is in relation to your exact site. It won't be the same for every site. Again, a apparent power factor difference comes from information from your site billing data, and then your site average pool price. So depending on when you consumed electricity, your settlement will vary off the average pool price. So for 2019, the annual average pool price was $54.88. But for this site, because of their pattern of load consumption, their charge price per megawatt hour was $51.88. So I think there's a lot of information on this slide, but it's probably a lot easier to understand going to Excel. But we'll just do a little bit more follow-up on the next slide, on slide 27. Say again that if you're having any trouble with site-specific data, please contact us. We'll help as much as we can. I've been working with DFOs to make sure I can do as much as I can, given the data that the ISO gets in the exercise of calculating bills. It helps me understand how your sites are configured, so I find it very interesting. And every site is unique. That's a really huge learning. And so there's a lot of understanding being developed in some of these conversations. And speaking to that, you know, I still put out the offer for one-on-one meetings with ISO. If you're not comfortable today asking your questions because you really want to test your site, I'm happy to have a one-on-one meeting and where we can just talk about your site and let's see what we can do and understand a little bit better and get that shared understanding. We're looking to book those, and if you want one, please request it as soon as possible because we want to wrap them up by April 14th or so. And email us at tariffdesign@iso.ca, and we promise to be responsive and get back to you as soon as we can.
Thanks, Lauren. There is questions. We'll go through them kind of in the hierarchy that they've come in. I see Christine has her hand up too. We're going to start with Kevin Eberle's question. On slide 21, it mentions the tool will not work for assessing the bill impact for DFO customers. And it's more of a question. Would you direct these people to the DFO directly? Is there another tool that's coming out? Can you help us to understand?
I'm sorry, I can't give you an update exactly on what the DFOs are doing. I mean, I've heard through word of mouth that they're working on something, and I'm sorry, I can't give you an update, but we can, you know what, it's just because we've been really rushed over the last 5 days, but it is a common question. So let's look at that and see if we can provide a broad answer to people.
Okay. The other thing that I might've heard you say in there, just put another way, is if you're directing him to wait for an answer from the ISO or go to the DFO for understanding the impact, to going to the DFO would be a good starting point.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Nicole Irwin's asking for a little bit of clarification on the phased in view for the 5-year average CP and how that's phasing in. And I think looking to understand how it might work or integrate with the tool. Can you provide a little bit of clarity on either how the phasing in process, just a little bit more clarity on how that might work or how it might be reflected in the tool today?
So this is part of the future preferred design that we haven't modeled. It's new, and we don't think it would be fair to look at 2016 to 2020 as a way to understand how customers respond in the future. So we did not build that into the tool because we would propose that it get phased in. That being, in year one of the new preferred rate design, your coincident meter demand charge would be based on your monthly megawatts of that year only. On year two, it would be based on year one and year two averaged for the month, that month. that month being like January or February or March. And then year three, it would now be a rolling 3-year average. And then, or it's not rolling at that point, it's 3-year average. By year four, it's 4-year. By year five, it's 5 years. And then it's rolling after that. So it builds on itself to 5 years. And that's the phased in explanation of what we mean by that.
So it's not going to be reflected in the tool today. It's more of an understanding that a participant's historical behavior doesn't necessarily dictate what the rates will be in the future. We're going to take a phased in approach to that. Is that a fair playback?
That's true. And you could, I mean, you could look at it and say, you know, given that kind of a signal, I'm going to increase or decrease my quiz meter demand determinants in the tool to see. You can test it that way.
Very good. I want to get to Surendra's comment. Then we're going to go to Christina Surendra in the Q&A. Or let's get Paul's questions in too. So we'll just bang through these Q&A questions and then we'll go to the hands up. Surendra is more of a comment. It looks like average annual pool price does not change with the different year. Can you either clarify or confirm if that's a tool bug that needs to be worked out, or is that a something that can be spoken to?
It must be a tool bug. If that's true, I'll look into it, Surendra.
Okay. And then two questions from Paula with Solus. Where's the test data located and can you provide sample data?
I'm not sure what test data, unless you mean sample data. And we did provide some sample data in the One Excel download you can get off of our website that says Bill Impact Tool V0.3 sample data, I think. So hopefully that helps.
Maybe if someone from the ISO can pull down that link and throw it in, that we can kind of direct Paul a little bit more white glove service for it along the way, that would be helpful. Let's go to Christine Runge. Let's get you unmuted.
Christine Runge with Power Advisory. My question is actually also about the 5-year rolling average. So I think you've mostly answered it. Thank you for that, LaRonda. I just will follow up to ask how the early months in the year would work. So January of the first year the rates go in would be billed on just January. And then would February be a 2-month average and then March be a 3-month average, and we roll that way until we get all the way up to 60 months?
No, it would be just January's or averaged.
Okay, so in the second year, it's an average of 2 Januaries.
Right.
Okay, that is very helpful to clarify. And then I just will add, I'm thinking about this from the DCG perspective. I'm doing this work for the DCG Consortium. So I'm wondering if you have any views, and you probably won't, on how the DFOs are going to treat this when they're dealing with DCG credits. And my worry with the 5-year average is that because you can only avoid a fifth of it by your actions in any given month, would the credits be arbitrarily essentially reduced by a fifth by looking at the averaging? And I don't know if that's something you've thought through or talked about with the DFOs at all, or something that I just need to go talk to Fortis about.
Yeah, I'd be speculating at best. I don't think that's helpful. So yeah, for sure, if you don't mind talking to Fortis.
Okay, I would just encourage you to think about that one. I know you're mostly focused on load customers, and I also know that the DCG credits might be changing here, but at least in the interim, that is going to have a material effect if all of a sudden the access to credits is reduced by half in the second year and then 66% in the third year as we roll into this average.
Okay. Yep. Got it. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Let's go to Surendra with your hand up, and then we'll go to Richard Penn in the Q&A.
All right. And you can hear me, Jordan?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Good morning, all. And so much face time with ISO and you, Jordan. I'll continue for next couple of months. I think I just want to highlight one mathematical issue. It's not a big deal with the 5 CP average. So say, LaRonda, the problem is you don't have a history because you're not using history to begin with. So once you got 5-year build, like 5 years into the program, every year you're paying in a given month 20% of that year, because you're adding the 5 year. So every you pay a year 20% at a time, and that every year you end up to 100% on a 5 year average, because on a sixth year the year which was sixth year on the past drop, and you add the new year. So you never pay more than 20% of a year in a month. So that's how the 5 year average works. Right? Because you are adding the five number together and dividing by five. Right? So this means the every number is accounted 20% of his number. But the problem is with the beginning years. And you can do this. I did a little spreadsheet, and I was just curious because normally the rolling average work when you have 5 year history. I have never heard is starting this average from day one and building upon. So that was what I was curious upon. So when you don't have history, the first year you already paid 100% of that year. Like January, first month of January, you already pay 100% of that month in January of that year. In the second year, you're gonna pay 50% of this year again, because that'll be average of two, right? In January and the following year. Then the January of third year, you're gonna pay 33% of this January of first year. So the first year get weighted very highly. And depending on how bad the good was, the first year was, second year was, you will have a different outcome. So there is a little mathematical issue the way you're proposing. So I'm not saying what the solution is, but think over.
Okay. And see how I'd love to have the mathematical conversation, Surendra.
I will send you the spreadsheet. It's a very simple spreadsheet. I was just curious. It's my curiosity that I was trying to see, because I just said that normally the moving average work when you have the history. And
right. And I maybe just quickly, because, you know, there's other people here that I want to maybe help aid in that conversation that. I mean, the first year would look exactly as it does today, right? So we would forecast the billing determinants exactly the way we do today, divide it by the amount that we need to recover, and that comes up with the rate. The second year, there may be an adjustment in the number of billing determinants to be collected that year. Maybe it's up or maybe it's down, right? And so then the rate is adjusted. So that's that one part of it. The second part is, in theory, you wouldn't be paying 50% one year, 50% the other year. And this is where I'll take a look at your spreadsheet. But I can see what you're saying for a site that does change from one year to the other year. So that, mm-hmm. you know, I do want to look at it and think about it mathematically from that perspective.
Yeah. That and I'll say it's very simple, like a spreadsheet. You're right. If the behavior doesn't change, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Because you are very, but if behavior change during first 5 year, this problem is only first 5 year, Lorenda. After it's not a problem. You change, you have to pay it anyway. Either you pay in 1 year everything, or you pay over the 5 years. So it's not an issue after 5 years.
Okay.
The issue is the first 5 years.
Okay.
All right.
Subject to check your spreadsheet. We might need to follow up on that.
I think my spreadsheet is just like a couple of lines, Lorenda. You will laugh on this one, but
okay.
But I think it's steady point.
There's no load factors or override toggles or anything. It's probably just showing the average weight of year one is higher than the average weight of year four. So.
Yeah, that's exactly. It's very simple.
Thank you, Surrender. We'll take that under advisement. Richard, I see your comment in the Q&A. The 12 CMD for 2019 is a big number. Is that based on 15 minute, based on the hourly, the number would be lower, so the 12 CP charge would be higher. I think that's more of a confirmation of his logic. So can you take a look at the Q&A question, Lorenda, and help us to understand that?
I think your logic's right, Richard, that if we move to an hourly, the megawatts would drop just by everything averaged. We'll do that. It's data to do for sure. Take a look at that and do a bit more understanding of the impact on the billing determinants to a change to the hourly. Thanks.
I group that with Colette's previous question too. I think those are of the same, cut from the same cloth. So. Mm-hmm. Perfect. I'm not seeing any other questions at this exact moment, LaRonda. So I would recommend that we continue to plot on and get into more of the tool and some of that orientation, see what other questions are asked.
Okay. So now we're going to, are we on slide 27 we finished up on? Yeah. So I'm going to go to Excel now. So let's just do a little bit of technical switching, sharing my screen. Can you see my, yeah, okay. Can you see Excel? Okay. So when you open the file, I talked about the information tab. I made my mouse bigger and changed it to a bright color, but it didn't do what I wanted it to do. So just give some more room here. So this is our, just some background on what this tool is and some of the tabs, what they do, and then some of our version history. Don't be surprised when version 0.4 comes out. And we loaded up this Excel spreadsheet with some sample data. It's not a real site, but tried to make it a little bit interesting. And yeah, we've got 5 years of annual data. The substation fraction is important when we talk about POD. This is whether the rate primary service credit applies to this site or no, the contract capacity, energy, and moving forward. And then over to the right, we start using dollars just because we want to do some quick, not as critical tests on the bill impact, because we don't expect these to change except as potentially any of these billing determinants would change. So that's as interesting as that tab is. And then we go to the annual summary. Oh, so that, since I said I wanted some back and forth, Colette raised her hand. I'd be happy to take a question now.
Thanks for the assist, LaRonda.
Oh, thanks, LaRonda. Just at the previous tab, just an observation. So this particular site, you see there's a contract capacity of 43.4 megawatts. And then when you scroll over to the highest meter demand, you'll note that it's never over 40 megawatts. So this site is clearly billing on contract capacity. For probably a number of months, and that's going to definitely impact the cost under the current tariff and under the new tariff. But you know, what pops out at me immediately is there's an opportunity to optimize the site, reduce the contract capacity to something that's more reflective of what they're using, and then redo this calculation to figure out what their actual cost impact would be if they had an appropriate contract capacity. So as you're going through these sites, I'm not sure if you've kind of taken note of how many point of deliveries are actually over contracted and what opportunity there is for customers here to get to the right contract levels. Thanks.
Okay. And I take your point too. We don't want to there's an impact today in today's design if you were to lower this contract capacity. I mean, pylon aside, if you lowered this to 38 megawatts, you would see an impact. So you could use this tool to test with the preferred design comparison and make this change here to 38 megawatts and then test again if you really wanted to see, to make sure that you weren't conflating the two impacts.
Yeah, I think this also speaks to the importance of your reviewing the pylon requirements as part of this tariff and giving people an opportunity to get to the right contract capacity just so they're not overpaying for their DTS charges.
Yeah. And to be honest, I kind of did this purposely just because I want you to use the tool as much as possible in any way you think can help you understand. So what I'll do in our test here is I'll lower this to 38 eventually, and then let's take a look.
Okay. Thank you.
So our sample site, you know, I was trying to be all fancy, and it has little graphs, has a percentage change on each year, and it keeps disappearing. So I'm tired of putting the data labels in the graph. I don't know why it does that. They're down here. So I can handle that. I can follow along, but still frustrating. So there's nothing really, really fancy about this file. It's just to try to give you some summary data and shows this site that there's some, you know, larger impacts in 2017 and 2020. And, you know, if you go back, you can see that, I mean, it's a lower coincidence factor here. And for this one, it's again, a lower coincidence factor, but a high load factor. And then just scroll down a little bit just to show the total bill impact in the graph there as well. So I wanted to spend a bit more time on the adjusting load profile. And I tested with the team that they're not, I've decreased the size so I can fit it all on my little monitor. But if you have trouble, if this isn't good, just give me some feedback here in the chat or the Q&A. So again, like we talked about in the PowerPoint, we can change this, and here I'll test Surindra's. Yeah, it's not changing the volume. Okay. I see why. It's just a little fix here. Oh, okay. Well, I'm wrong. Okay. Work on that. So I'm going to go back to 2019. And in the override files, well, I'll just walk through it. Grade primary service credit is grayed out, and it should be because this is no. And so under current design, we're calculating the bulk charge, coincident meter demand charge, and the regional demand charge. Now, in our current tariff design, there's two energy components that add up to $2.18. We've combined them for the purposes of this kind of comparison between for our preferred rate design. So it looks a little different than the rate DTS sheet, but the math should exactly be the same. We are showing how pod charges are calculated and the rates based on your substation fraction. Your pod charges will vary. We're calculating or showing the metered energy, the transmission constraint rebalancing charge, voltage control charge, and OSSS charge to get a total DTS bill of $6.3 million for the year. Once we add in the energy settlement, so the paying for their energy consumed by the hourly pool price, the total bill is $17 million. So that's under today's tariff. And then we look at preferred rate design, and the whole structure looks exactly the same, except the rates have changed. And that's inputted on a hidden tab here where we put in all the rates. Okay. So I'm going to start doing some overrides. So if you look at this, in this case, we kind of made it a little bit more confusing because our contract capacity is quite high. So changing your highest meter demand is not going to have much of an impact at all. But for the sake of example here, I'm just going to change it to 25 megawatts. And that just overrides that value here and flows through on billing capacity calculation here. That's all that one does. Now, for coincident meter demand, that might be the one that's a little bit more interesting. This site has a 73% coincidence, so they're taking quite a few megawatts at the time of 12 CP. So instead of on average 20.6 megawatts, you could say, I mean, maybe they want to get to 10 and see what the impact, and that would change the coincident meter demand annual megawatt. And it changes down here. So instead of multiplying over $10,000 times 247, it's about 6,000 times 120 to get a much lower charge. So I'll just erase that again. Contract capacity, I mean, this won't be the best way to do this tool, but we saw the highest meter demand was 38 megawatts. We reduced this. You'll see an impact, but it's a change you could do today if you change your contract capacity. And that, again, flows through the calculation when we get to billing capacity. It takes in the highest meter demand, 90% of the contract capacity. We haven't really included ratchet, since our ratchet is a rolling 24-month calculation. It impacts site's bills, and it is included in your historical, your site data input that we provide. It's just not something that you can change in the tool. So I'm going to change that back now. As far as energy, I mean, for me, I don't know if anybody thinks about how many megawatt hours they consume in a month in changes, but maybe your load factor, change it to 75% load factor. That will change this consumption here. So your energy times $10 will change. As well, it'll change your energy market settlement number. So we've now reduced the consumption to be charged a pool price. And again, we'll just continue to use this realized pool price at this site, which was $51.88. So for changing that load factor to 75%, you can see total bill impact is now below zero and we're at 0.7%. I'm not suggesting this is what the site would do. I'm just showing you how the tool could to manage that. If I keep that at 75% and I go to annual summary, it should flow and it shows like 0.7% change. So it doesn't show up on the graph really. And this can allow you to compare, you know, this 1 year to each of these other years or to the average. And again, like I said, we can change this, but it sounds like I need to fix up the pool price. Again, it's not used anywhere in here, the pool price, because we use your realized pool price, which is based on your total energy charge for the year divided by your actual energy to get a pool price. So this is important because it shows you the tool is working, but it doesn't actually figure in the calculation. So I'm happy to take any more questions. I'm going to do what Colette suggested. Let's lower again, this will be a difficult, unless we, you know, pick 1 year and change it. So in this year, they're at a $5.8 million transmission bill for 2020. And let's say they change their 2020 to 38 megawatts. So that was a $200,000 change. And it would have flowed through to the preferred rate design as well. Let me go back and prove that. Oh, because I'm on 20. Sorry, I got to go back to, I got to do 2020. So now it's 38 megawatts and I don't have any other overrides. So if they had, so I think that's what Colette's point was. If they had contracted appropriately, they would have seen a higher rate impact from the preferred rate design. And, Colette.
Sorry to bug you, but just a question on that. So if they kind of figured out if, you know, we had optimal 38 megawatts, optimal, we had perhaps, you know, more opportunity to manage coincident meter demand, and that gets them to the 10% impact, but they hadn't been previously captured in that kind of bucket based on the five-year historical. Is that something that the ISO would then look at mitigation for this particular site?
From everything we've done to this point, I would say no. how we've built the mitigation, the targeted mitigation engagement process, and determine the tests to reach that. Understanding how someone could have behaved and then looking at the impact isn't part of that mitigation engagement test threshold.
And so then a follow-up, were there any customers that, like in 2020, that were kind of approaching that 10%, but, you know, based on an average of the historical, weren't captured?
Are you talking about this average here?
Yeah, I know you're using the 2019 kind of test year for engagement, but say something changed in 2020. You know, is that something that would have fallen through kind of your filter or?
Well, I think our net was fairly wide. Like we didn't, like, it wasn't like there was sites at 9.9%, right? And we said, okay, no, that doesn't meet our threshold. And 2020 is, again, really tough year. It's hard to gather patterns from that. Not to say that this is what this mitigation is, it's about patterns necessarily. But we did use our tests to be 2019 year and the 2017 to 2020 average. And if either one of those was yes, they're part of the targeted mitigation. But I think all of our sites met both tests.
Okay. And then, sorry, just one more question. If you were using the 2021 billing determinants, like based on that test year, how would the rate be, you know, different? What would the energy rate be? What would the demand charges be?
So the only thing I can put in is, you mean like 2021 forecast revenue requirement and 2021 forecast billing determinants?
Yes.
Yeah. Asking for the rates for those. Okay. I haven't done that yet. I think what you're asking is you're testing, would these percentages change again in a comparison? But I still have to create, I still need to use this sample under today's design using that 2021 revenue requirement and billing determinants, correct?
Yeah, so it would adjust the rates of the preferred tariff, I would assume.
It would also adjust the rates of today's tariff too.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So you may see a bigger bill impact, noting that the coincident meter demand charge and the billing capacity charge are higher in today's tariff than what they're, and the metered energy number, I think it might even be a little lower in today's rate versus the new proposal. I guess we would like to see that, just to see the impact that also has on the bill.
Okay. I can definitely do it. It's not a huge ask, and I think it would be interesting to follow. I just want to make sure now we'd be talking about forecast billing determinants in 2021. And there's just a huge plus or minus to that because of the situation we're in, I think.
Yeah, I think it's important for us to understand kind of going forward, if the revenue requirement increases, you know, year over year, how does this rate change increase relative to what the old one would have increased? Because with more weighting on the energy component, I would expect as a revenue requirement increases, that rate of change on the energy component will also increase more than it would have under the current rate. So I think we also, you know, not only do we want to do a look back, but we want to do a forecast of what this means for any particular site as we're, you know, trying to understand the impact of this and over the long term and investments and all that kind of thing.
Trying to do the mental math in my head to keep up with you, Colette. I think you're miles ahead of where I'm at, first off. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to, and I think I did mention this to LaRonda before, the ISO used to have the, you know, the detailed DTS rate impact model that did a, you know, outlook of several years, including a forecast of capital additions, how that flows through to all the TFO tariffs, and then you could, you know, take the rate and put in your data and figure out what your rate, like a rate calculator for the future, you know, 10, 15 years would be. I think that would be very valuable for the ISO to provide that with this proposal in it.
Okay. So we'll absolutely capture that kind of request for it. If I'm trying to do the mental gymnastics to get there, I think anytime we're looking into that forecast side, there's going to be a bunch of disclaimers around behavior and how other things might actually cascade through. But we'll absolutely take that request and put it with on the team to think about a little bit further.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Peter Chan's question in the Q&A. If billing capacity is reduced with a pylon, the change will not appear until year 5. Am I correct?
Well, let me read the question. I know.
I've also heard both pylon and pylon. If someone could just direct me so I don't sound like a pylon when I'm saying it right or wrong. But
we say pylon. I don't think it's in the definition of where the emphasis needs to be. If you paid your pylon and your contract, I mean, this is as if you could create real rates this month rather than I'm trying to forecast. I might not exactly know a customer that's reducing their contract and paying the pylon, but let's say you could. No, the billing determinants would in actual reduce as soon as you pay your pylon and the contract is reduced. That's for the billing capacity charge. So that's the regional or the regional type system charge, the billing capacity charge. If, 'cause the year 5, the only part that year 5 pertains to the pylon is that you, if you want to reduce your contract capacity, you can either pay the pylon, which is the payment in lieu of notice, or give us 5 years notice. So then it would occur in 5 years. But if you pay your pylon, that should, without paying for your pylon. Okay, good. Thank you. Right. If you give us notice that you're going to reduce your contract, that won't happen until the fifth year.
All right. Hopefully that answers your questions there, Peter. We'll go to Raj's question. Could the ISO provide 5-year data by pod for each of the DFOs to enable the assessment of the impact of change in tariff structure by DFO?
We I think it came up on Thursday as well. We traditionally file, we must file within our application, the bill impact appendix, which looks at each pod. It's anonymized pod data. And we are looking to provide that as well. We have taken back the suggestion that earlier assessment by stakeholders would be really helpful, and we're taking that away to see what we could do and when we could do it.
Okay, Raj, let me know if you've got a follow-up to that, that maybe there's a point in time difference between the filing and what you're kind of requesting for. Let's move on to Robert Henry's question. Why is the test year 2019 tariff rates different from the actual 2019 tariff rates? And just an apologies if that rationale has already been articulated.
I probably gave it one shot at trying to articulate that. So it's always worth trying at it again. Our 2019 rates that were charged and approved by the commission were based on forecast revenue put requirement and forecast billing determinants. This is like a perfect 2019. Now we actually know the costs applicable to 2019, and we know the billing determinants that happened. So there is difference there.
Hopefully that answers your question there, Robert. Please fire back in the Q&A if not. I see an echo or a second to Colette's request about the forecast for what the rates would be. So I'll let you just take a read through that, LaRonda, and just understand it. But I think we can capture that request in the fact that there's multiple people asking and reflecting on that.
Okay, sorry, I was reading some other stuff too. Christy, a question. I agree. And we have committed to provide in our applications when you change our tariff design to provide the transmission rate projection worksheet, which has that full background and in there to do that sort of an average dollars per megawatt hour view of what rates could be under current TFO revenue requirement and GTA applications and gross plant and a whole bunch of inputs. So we would file that with our filing to the commission. And again, we've taken away what can we do in advance that is helpful. So that might be part of that. But there is, you know, I kind of alluded to a little bit on Thursday, there's a lot that will be filed within the application that we do every GTA, right? We did it in the 2018 as well, and we'll continue to do that as well.
Okay, thanks, Lorana. Thanks for your comment and second there, Christine. Albert's question, I think this is in follow-up to the conversation we had on the pylon. But can the notice be rescinded within the 5 years? And Albert, maybe just correct me if I'm wrong in that understanding or where I'm attributing that.
I'll take it as that's his question, that it can be, can the pylon be rescinded within the 5 years? You know, I'll have to take a look. We haven't had a ton of notices given on a contract reduction. So I don't have a lot of experience with testing the provisions in the tariff on that, but I can take that one away.
And we know Raj has a follow-up. We're waiting with bated breath. So Raj, and maybe your answer is very similar to what you just provided, Colette and Christine as well, that it sounds like folks are eager to get some of this information in advance of the filing so they can understand some of this kind of prior to the filing come through. I'm not sure if you can comment on that, Laurent, other than just acknowledging what the request is.
Sorry. Trying to follow along.
So this is in reference to getting pod by pod level detail for all of the DFOs to understand the impact. And you mentioned that you would do that as part of the filing. I think Raj is requesting, is there anything that can come in prior to the filing?
And we've taken that away as well to see what we can do and what would be helpful ahead of time. Again, we constant over everything we're doing right now is to make the application of the filing to be as regulatory efficient and you know, least painful as possible. So if there's information that is really helpful to get out ahead, and it would help regulatory efficiency, that's where we want to see the win-win.
Another question coming in from Paula with Solus. For new applications such as energy storage with no history, how the five-year change occurs, or do they go directly to the first application? I think that's more about maybe a clarification on how something like energy storage might get phased in, but I think that would get phased in the same as all the other assets. Can you help me to understand that, Lorana?
I don't know if we're starting to talk about the pylon or are we talking about the coincident meter demand five-year phase in with history. So maybe I shouldn't speculate on what specifically Paul is referring to.
Paula, do you want to maybe put your hand up? We'll get you just to ask your question in real time.
Hi there. Sorry about that. Stop multitasking, Paula. The idea is that, so you're talking a lot about phase in for existing loads, that they would sort of do it over a longer period of time with historical load data, and you would shift over gradually to this new rate, is my understanding.
All right, okay, so let this be absolutely clear, and this is probably my confusion. When we're talking about phase in, we're only talking about that, how you determine the coincident meter demand megawatts.
Okay.
Be it 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year average, and then rolling 5 years.
Okay. So if you're brand new and you don't have historical, then right. How is it done?
It would be a null average, right? So it would be building your 5 history as well over time. So if you, let's say rates are in place 2023 and every other site that's been around forever starts in that year, an energy storage site comes along, or any other load site that's brand new comes along a year and a half later, their average would just, there's no point before, they did not exist before. So their average would continue to build that 5-year rolling along with it, if that makes sense.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Paul, I see Colette's hand is up. Let's get Colette unmuted.
Hi, just as a follow-up to Paula's question, if a site, say perhaps built on-site generation in year 2 or year 3, and they're no longer going to be operating during coincident peak demand because of the change to their operation, is there some sort of provision for waiving the coincident peak ratchet, essentially, that's been incurring the prior 2 years, so they're not paying it for the following 3 years? Or is that something that would stay with you for 5 years, even though you no longer were taking energy from the grid? Or, for example, even if a site went away, how does that get treated?
So if I'm understanding you correctly, if there's a material change to the site dynamics, how does that change that 5-year historical on how the allocation will work?
Right. Is there some sort of pylon for that, or is it just, you know, or is it waived, or how would the ISO treat that?
I would say we kind of align with the pylon. The pylon, not to say the payment in lieu of notice, because the payment in lieu of notice is to say you need to pay 5 years worth. There's facilities that have been considered driven, whatever, because of profile or contract capacity in the past. So it's this 5-year planning window. And then the pylon allows you not to pay anymore after the 5th year.
Okay.
So I think the coincident meter demand, it doesn't continue to charge. Like it's not a forever thing like a contract, but it does allow us to recover costs from sites that where their pattern has been a part of the picture of cost causation, that there's that 5-year planning window.
So if a site, for example, knows now that they're going to have generation built in year 2 of this new program, could they not provide notice to the ISO right now that says I'll be gone in year 2. I don't want to pay that first year CP charge for the following 4 years.
And Colette, I just want to also, I think we're kind of flirting with that line of rate design a little bit for things. So we'll kind of take that as much as we can right now around it.
Yeah. I just guess that does have a material impact on how you will value the rate impact to your particular site and what you may plan to do to mitigate. So you don't have to answer that now, but, you know, I think at some point we need to understand how this would work in a variety of scenarios.
I'll go back. I won't answer the question, but I'll do first principles. We want our signals to provide good information so that we plan the appropriate amount of transmission. And that was from our 2018 application. And I think the same case is here. If a site has good information to provide us that could help us, then I think that's a good comment, Paulette. Like, I think give us back in our feedback on your exact point there. If a customer knows now, yeah, let's encourage that good information to continue coming.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Colette. Ed, I see your hands up.
Good morning, Ed from DeepL Consulting. Just looking at that sheet that you have in front of you, and a while ago, LaRonda, you put in, I think, 60% in the load factor.
Mm-hmm.
Could you, and right now they're getting like a total bill impact of transmission cost impact of 8.3%. Could you just stick in the 60 again down there?
Yeah.
So now they get a reduction of 6%. Is your calculation simply based upon reducing the megawatt hours?
It's in two spots here, like in the under the energy charge.
Yeah.
And then also down in the energy market settlement, it changed. Or you were just talking the 6%, right? It changed here. It also changed the operating reserve charge transmission constraint balancing charge and the voltage control.
Okay, so if this was just building off what Colette was saying, so if this was a customer that was going to put in a generator and help manage their transmission costs, then they would probably get a bigger rate impact because they would probably eliminate their coincident peak charge as well. So they could see a lot larger decrease in their bill.
Right. Yeah, like I can combine them.
And is that the I have a rate design question, so I'll probably get shut down here. when I read the distribution inquiry report, I mentioned a lot about uneconomic bypass and how the commission was very concerned about that. And given, the rates that we're seeing here, when you can manage, put in a small generator and decrease your energy you're using and manage your coincident peak and basically you can push a bunch of costs, transmission costs onto other rate payers without really creating a system improvement. Do you think that really satisfies what the commission was talking about in terms of dealing with uneconomic bypass?
I think that's a question, probably not best answered today, Ed. But I mean, looking at our preferred tariff design from the cost causation principles, I guess it would say that it doesn't agree with, I think that was your third point in there, without providing value.
Yeah, I think that's where the commission made its, what it defined an uneconomic bypass. It's really just a cost shift as opposed to something that creates value for everybody in the system. Because I guess as we change the, who pays what, as you said, I mean, it's the same amount that has to be recovered. So if this customer is not recovering it, then you're just simply getting it from someone else.
It's an interesting question, Ed. I kind of agree with Laranda's sentiment. I don't know if this is the right conversation medium by which we should be channeling that one. Incredibly important. Don't want to disregard or undermine that in any way, shape, or form, but probably a little out of scope for today.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Ed. I see Victoria, you've had your hand up.
Hello, everyone. You can hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, Victoria Bellissimo with IPCA. So first of all, Laranda, thank you for providing this tool. It's been very helpful. What I've been doing for our members is putting an extra tab on, results tab, and then dumping all the data in and literally copying and pasting and then just building a summary tool for everybody. Okay. So for those of you who aren't IPCA members, you should build yourself a results tab too. So that's been good, but most of the load in the province goes through distribution companies, and we've been trying hard to figure out calculators for them. And Fortis has put some work into it, and they're still going to put some work into it, and I think you'll see that. But what they're going to end up with is basically a percentage impact by rate class. So you'll see, large general service gets this percentage increase at rate 61, general service gets this percent decrease. And so on and so forth. And then they'll have it in different buckets. So if you're a lower load factor customer versus medium versus high, but they won't end up with the same kind of calculator where you literally put in your data and come out with an answer. So I'm just saying this so that everybody has a good understanding that if we get calculator data from the DFOs, it's not going to be as good as what Laranda has put together here. But maybe there's some way that the DFOs can work with the ISO to provide us at least a range of outputs using a similar tool. And I think that would be very appreciated. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to give a range so that customers can sum up all of their sites and understand whether or not this is a good news or a bad news story for them. And the other thing that I wanted to mention to the group is Fortis has been great. the other DFOs are not talking to me right now. So it would be really nice if everybody could call up their reps, at, not just ATCO, but also EPCOR and NMAX, and ask nicely for this data, because people really do want to understand their impacts. And maybe I haven't made enough phone calls yet, and I don't have a whole lot of load in the cities, but somebody needs to call those guys up and ask them to play ball. So plea to the masses to do that.
I think that was an action that Victoria signed everyone on the call today. So consider it noted for it. We'll grab that. Thanks, Victoria. Any other questions on the tool, how the tool can be used, how you can use the tool to understand your implications? Anything of that sort? No questions too simple, I should add as well. If you're sitting back and this just looks like gibberish, have those questions right now. Naive questions are greatly welcome.
Let's see if we get questions, but we did get some feedback on, I'm going to go like step out of this for a second, on our tariff modernization initiative here at the ISO, looking at ways to make tariff information more accessible, more understandable, some transparency, definitely a greater understanding. And the feedback was our current bill estimator tool may not quite work for a lot of people. And I kind of built this off of the bill estimator tool. And so any feedback, even outside of just for this purposes, like how you as a site thinks about your load data, I'd like to learn from that and see how we can also build tools that are a lot more useful to people. And I know the bill estimator tool is amazing for people that have really a good deep understanding of rate DTS and rate STS, but maybe it's not the best tool for someone that's just looking for some basic information. So this might also help me on that odyssey of mine as well.
Tariff modernization was out of scope for today, Laronda, too, but I'll let it pass. We'll let it work for today.
Okay.
Any other questions that might arise? I'm seeing no. So here's what I'm going to propose that we do. Laronda and the team are going to stick on the call for an extra 10 minutes. So that if you're a straggler, if you're a little bit worried about maybe asking your question in front of the larger group, you can stick around and see if you're maybe comfortable in a minute or two, but, we'll consider the formal side of this, officially concluded, and there's not going to be much more if we don't get any other questions in the last 10 minutes.
We just want to run through some follow-ups.
Yeah.
We have to do that. We Very have fair. A 30-some slide deck. We got to go through it.
Very fair. I'm jumping the gun. Over to you then.
Yeah, I think Claudia is going to share the presentation. So we did questions. If we can move to the next slide. So it's just based, the next steps are just reminders, but we are looking for feedback on the session today. We're going to do a Zoom poll. And I got good feedback on what works, doesn't work. I'll ask Victoria to share her results tab with me, so I can maybe add that to version 4. And I'll take Sorrento's points on a few things. I heard Colette's. Anyways, here I'm summarizing the whole session. But please provide your feedback. We are trying to limit some of the Zoom fatigue, and hopefully today was a little bit less formal and a little bit of a break. I'm sorry we didn't do 100. Slide deck for today, but I couldn't make it work. All right. So on slide 33, we are looking for comments on our comment matrix that's on our website, and the path is provided here. We're looking for additional comments on how helpful was today's session, and I'm sure you can add other comments in there. Fix this, do this differently, et cetera. So there's a lot of areas that we're looking for feedback on, and this is just a reminder. And I think our net, and then following up on that on slide 34. Yeah. Our next session, we haven't set a date yet for that, so session 6, but we will be providing notice for the stakeholders in our newsletter and on our website. And we'll be, the purpose and objectives are laid out there. I won't restate them. For interest of, let's making this very less Zoom fatigue. So thank you very much. Thanks for attending, and hope this is helpful, and looking forward to talking to all of you next time.
Brilliant. So 10:30 right now, we'll formally adjourn the proceedings. As I promised before, we're going to keep Laronda and team around for just an extra 10 minutes. If there are some last minute questions, we'll keep the recording going, so you shouldn't feel like you're going to miss anything otherwise, but we'll see if anyone lingers around, some other questions might come to the group. But otherwise, thanks all for your attention today, and we'll formally adjourn.
Paula asks, do you have a DOS estimator? No, we do not, Paula. But, looking towards, if we get feedback, I'm not promising, but depending on the feedback we get and where we go, that might be a definitely add that we need to do, to probably build it in the bill impact tool as well.
Okay. I see Peter's got his hand up. Peter?
Hello?
Hi, hello. We can hear you.
Oh, perfect. I apologize. I'm a little bit confused about who can do the face in and who cannot do the face in. Like, I'm just a little bit confused.
Okay, that's good. Good to get some clarity out there. So what do you mean phase in? Are we talking about the particular points of meter demand or
the rolling average? Like the year one, the second year would be the average of the previous 2 years. I apologize, I'm a little bit confused. Or like if I have a history of, my site is over 10 years, so I have the previous 5 years history. So if the new tariff kicks in, so I would automatically for the CPD, then you will be taking the average of the last 5 years. Am I correct? But then you did mention like someone can do the rolling average for phase in.
It'll be consistent for everyone. The only people that it would be different is if you were a site that started 2 years after the tariff design started. And so the very first year of the new tariff design, if it's approved, that first year would be just like it is today. No looking back in history.
Okay.
And then, so then we get through the first year. Now the second year will be a 2 year average of the January, of the Februarys, of the Marches. And then this is for every single site. And then the third year, there would be a 3 year average of the January's, February's, all the way to 5 years for everyone. The only one that's different than that is a site that didn't create coincident meter demand, had null values for that first year of the new tariff design and the second year of the new tariff design. And then they started up. They will have to build their 5 years of history.
So I want to also add in Eugene's question here, because it sounds like it's a statement, and I worry that this is still a little misunderstood. So Eugene's question is, this five-year phase-in would only affect those customers who are new to responding to the CMD after their redesign rate has been implemented. And I don't believe that's actually true based on what I've heard from you, Laronda. I think everyone is going to be subject to this phase, and the history is more in helping you to understand what the rate impact would be, but everyone's going to phase in. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm wary now saying words that maybe are glib, but to ease an understanding, you're all new in that first year in creating history. Because we don't think it's a fair exercise to go back and use your 2019 history when the pricing signal wasn't there to respond in that manner. So you're creating fresh history in that year of the new tariff design.
Does that answer your question, Peter?
It does. And I think it is confusing to many people, like Eugene, kind of a little bit confused like I did. Maybe that's something you can clarify in your, like, I know that you're going to send out the presentation. If you can kind of clarify that, it is confusing who can or yeah. So that's my advice. Then you said about, is continue to be the 12 CP, and that basing in like what you just talked about, first year would be just the year one, the second year would be the previous 2 years. So everyone will do the phasing and the co-instant peak would be the 12 CP.
It's a 5 year average 12 CP. It's just starting to sound very complex.
That makes sense now.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks, Peter. I want to get Brian's question in, and then we've got a bit of a clarification from Eugene as well. So let's start with Brian, then we'll go to Eugene.
Me. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Brian.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, Laurent, just sorry to belabor this, but I'm not an economist, and so I'm trying to figure this out. So the 12, again, the 5 year 12 CP. First of all, I'm going to start with the current one. So the current one is you have a coincident peak at a certain hour in a certain month, and your load there contributes to the overall load at that for that hour in that month. And the percentage that you contributed defines the percentage of the overall costs that shall be charged to you. That's the current system. Do I have that correct, basically?
Yeah, I mean, not everyone thinks of it as percentage, but I think you're correct.
Okay, and so, and to me, that totally makes sense. So there's an hour each month, and you contributed to the peak, and you figure out what your load is, and you figure out what the overall load of that hour was, and then you figure out what you owe. But this new system is, let's just say, obviously the first year is the same as currently, but the second year is, we keep calling it an average, but I don't know what we're averaging. Are we averaging, like, am I averaging the amount of load I had at the exact same hour of the exact same month of the previous year? And then am I also averaging the total peak load for that hour for both the months of both the years? I'm not sure exactly what I'm averaging.
Okay. I'll probably do a really bad job trying to talk it through. I'm a visual person, so let me give one more. In no way is this implying that I don't understand people aren't getting it. I get it's confusing, and I think a picture is worth 1,000 words here. But maybe we'll just do an example. You're in the first year of the tariff design in January. Your load at the time of the coincident peak was 10 megawatts in that January. You'll pay 10 megawatts times the coincident peak charge. Then the next year, the second year, now you're, just to, you know, help me with averaging, your load is 20 megawatts at the time of coincident peak. So we'll average 10 megawatts from the year before January with 20 megawatts from January of this year, and it will be 15 megawatts will be your billing determinant charge for that month.
So wait a second, sorry, let me pause. So those can be completely separate hours within the month of January.
Absolutely, yeah. It is just looking at your megawatts that year before in January.
Okay. And so now the average is 15 in that second year.
Yeah. So it's a reduction from what it would be under the current design from 20.
But then what's the charge based on? The coincident peak charge of that, of the second year, or an average of the charge?
So your charge will be based on that 15 megawatts. You'll be 15 megawatts times dollar, right? The dollar, the rate, it'll be calculated by looking at everyone's averaged billing determinants to say, we got to recover this many costs divided by this many billing determinants, it's there. That's the rate. And it will change. The rate will change because we are making this type of a change.
Yeah, but okay. So what's strange though is, okay, so I consume 20 in the second year, 10 the first year, averages 15. And then you're trying to recover a bunch of costs for that second year. I'm assuming just the cost for the second year you're recovering. And so then you take everyone's averages. I have 15, someone else has 15, 15, 15, 15. Everyone has 15, let's say. And then we're all contributing our 15s towards a larger number, which then defines a percentage, which then defines a percentage of the overall cost that you're supposed to recover, if you know what I mean, right? Like everyone's 15 contributes. Okay, here's a good. Actual megawatts at time of monthly system peak, which is a different time. Okay. 2 year rule. No, but I get that. Like I get how you average. Yeah. The math works with averaging 2 years. That the average of 12 and 10 is 11. But what I don't understand is then in your example, I had 15. And the 15 goes towards a percentage of the overall costs that need to be captured. And are those the costs that need to be captured in that second year only?
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So do you take everyone's 15, assuming everyone had 15, let's just say, do you add up all the 15s and say, what's my percentage of the 15 versus the overall 15s for that particular month? And then that's the percentage I pay?
I think it's the percentage part happens at the beginning. So if we have to recover $2.3 billion and
yep.
30% has to be recovered for the 12CP. Now we know, okay, so that's, let's say $500 million has to be okay. recovered from these megawatts in 2023.
Right.
Right. And then, so we'll say our forecast of how many of those megawatts for everyone is equal to 90,000. We take the 500 million divided by 90,000 and we get
our. So rate. Your forecast or the actual measured megawatts?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It can't be your actual measured megawatts because now you're using averages.
No, so it has. It's a forecast of the build. Megawatts, I guess, if that makes sense. So if you're taking your $500 million divided by 90,000, let's say, and 90,000 is equal to the sum of the expected build megawatts.
Expected?
Forecast, yeah, because okay. It's a forecast. So
the current 12CP signal works on actual, does it not?
No, but we've got a forecast to create the rate. I have to forecast that 90 some thousand megawatts.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. It gets trued up in the DAR, but at the beginning, it has to come up with estimates. So for 2023, we only got one. It's going to be if 2023 is a year, it's going to look just like it does today. No difference
in how
we forecast, right? But in year two, there could be an impact and those billing determinants may go up or might go down. I'm not sure, but a lot of work to do and see how people respond. That may change the rate. So it's not changing how we're not introducing a risk of not recovering that $500 million. The rate will adjust because the total sum of the billing determinants would change.
Okay. And so, but what you're saying then is my average gets added to everyone else's averages. And then the percentage of my contribution goes towards the recovery of whatever your forecast amount is for year two.
Yeah. I start to get wary of using my percentage
okay.
of that cost. But I think you're there.
What I would love to see, like this table that you show here doesn't really help me out because it just, teaches me how to do averages. What I'd like to understand is kind of like here's how the ISO does it. We forecast this amount, and then the current system is we measure your peak and we figure out your contributions to the overall peak, and then we figure out a rate, you know, and then how does it change? I guess the way it changes in my perspective is that. Now you're comp- you're in the current system, you're comparing everyone's actuals at, for that 1 hour of each month, right? And that's what you calculate. But now you're calculating, you're using everyone's averages, whatever those averages after year two, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be similar if you changed how you calculated, you know, energy or something, like if it was just on peak energy or something like that.
And maybe to step in here, Brian, if I'm hearing you correctly, for it, you want to understand and have someone kind of walk through the actual systematic approach of how we're going from the 2.3 billion and how that all gets trickled down into almost more of the formula that you can then say, okay, and this is what it means for me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like it would be great to say, okay, well, here's how it's done today. This is what we need to recover. And here's how all the calculations to figure out how we recover it over the course of a year. And then it would trickle down. You're right. It would trickle down all the way to, okay, my contribution is some small amount of the overall contribution that pays for the overall amount. And then transitioning to this new system, okay, well, now we're dealing with this average thing. And how are we going to recover all those rates on the average? But now, I think I kind of get it that we're now talking about just averages of different hours of peak. Like it could be completely random different hours in January that drive the system peak. And it doesn't matter. Like that's the weird thing about the system. So it really stops mattering what my overall contribution is to the system peak in any particular hour. All that matters, see, this is where I'm totally confused. All that matters is whatever my consumption was for that particular hour. Even it doesn't matter what the overall contribution was for that hour. It just gets all averaged. I still don't really get it, but maybe just, I'm not going to waste everyone's time. There's probably other people.
I think you've hit on something that's important, Brian, because if you have this question and you've been leading and saying you're not an economist, I know not everyone on the call is an economist. I'm sure there's others that have this same question for it too. So I commend you for coming forward with it. What I'm hearing from you is just an understanding of how all of this cascades forward and what matters and what doesn't. Into what's actually there to help you to follow and understand what this implication means to you in terms that make sense to you. And I think that we can absolutely take that away from the ISO's perspective and see if there's a way to better communicate that.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'll drop it off. Like, yeah, I get the sense that currently I have to be wary of what my overall contribution is to the system peak at any particular hour of any particular month. But now that we're averaging stuff, I'm not sure what I'm now targeting. Am I still targeting my contribution at any particular hour of any particular month after 5 years? Or am I targeting some other peak number, like a peak average? I just don't know what I'm really targeting. I'll drop off.
Don't feel bad about this. This was a good exchange, Brian.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
And again, there's a reminder to reach out if you want a one-on-one where, you know, we are happy to help anyone anytime, but this might be a really great time to ask for one.
Yeah. Yeah. I sent you an email around this. Okay. So you'll see in your inbox. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Tori. You've had your hand up for a little bit of time here.
Yeah. And I guess LaRonda, you kind of answered it there, that slide you popped up. I just think you guys need an example, right? Like 80% of these questions, maybe 95% of these questions are because there's no example, right?
Yeah.
And when you put that up, I'm like, okay, like despite Brian saying that shows them how to average, I think there's a, you know, having a, like the rate calculator is really good and I appreciate everything you guys have done, but I just think like it would have been nice to have an example. And this is kind of, you know, I saw this in capacity market too. It gets really complicated and people get kind of caught up in how the rate's changing. I mean, to me, it's all the same. It's just you're using an average versus a point in time, right? Like, and people are getting confused and they don't understand. I didn't understand until today that the history wasn't going to follow through. You know, and Christine said something about like thirds and fifths, and I didn't get that either. Like I just think to me it's without an example people are kind of grasping at straws. I didn't get a lot of the people complaining about it today because my understanding was maybe different. And when you put that up, I was like, oh yeah, like just like a couple site examples would probably be help people who are kind of maybe not as, you know, as closely following this, or that they have a, you know, they have a real good understanding of the rates and how it's going to change. And that's all I was going to say, because I think everything's been really well laid out. Just having an example for some people to follow through would, you know, maybe streamline the questions you get to, like, from your emails.
Thanks, Tori. Appreciate it. I want to go, let's get Paula's question, then we'll come back to Eugene's clarification in the Q&A. So Paula.
I'm just going to follow up on, I think it was Brian's question before, on the averages. Because in an average, you can have, like, if your head is in an oven and your feet are in an ice box, on average, you're fine. So for this, does that mean that you could really go extreme sometimes and really conservative other times, and on average, you're fine? Like, does that lead to that behavior compared to the actuals?
Well, I would think the impact would be that if you go extreme at times, the megawatts charged on the rate are just drawn out a little bit longer. If you have one month out of the 5 years of months, that's much higher. It will mitigate the charge in that month, but it will have an impact for 5 years. And the total megawatts from some of the simple stuff I did, I think it's, law of averages, there's probably some impact, but you still pay for those megawatts just over a longer period of time.
Okay. Thank you.
Sounds like a smoothing factor. Yeah. Around it. Okay. I want to come back to Eugene's question. It is about the 5 years and just that clarification for it again. Eugene, I wonder if I can't convince you to maybe come on the phone and just live for a second. So let's get Eugene unmuted.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Eugene from Empower. So basically I have questions for the 5 year data or 5 year rolling average of the CMD. So if a customer, let's say, like, after this redesigning thing has been implemented, so if the customer is decided to, let's say, go with any DCG to lower their demand, their coincident meter demand, but they have had the historical data or CMD data for, let's say, 1 or 2 years. So does it make sense that what they will be doing to lower their CMD is going to be less impacting because they already have, like, let's say 2 to 3 years of records in the system?
Less. So
can you say it once more for us, Eugene?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. So let me clarify. So let's say, like, this redesign, rate redesigning has been implemented, let's say in 2023, right? So if the customers has not been responding for the year of 23 and 24, and then they start to respond on the 24, so 25, 6, 7 afterwards. Yeah. So, like, the charge that they will be seeing on their billing, it's going to be less impacting because if they respond on 25, then they will still have to account for those, like, unresponded events on 23 and 24. Is that the case?
Yeah. Like if we're saying they're not responding to the 12CP signal in 23 and 24, you know, that go to my example, 20 megawatts. And then the third year they say, hey, let's do something. And they're down to 10 megawatts. Then their bill for that month in the third year would be 20 plus 20 plus 10 divided by 3. So even though they've responded in the third year, they're not going to see the immediate impact on their bill because of the 2 years of history that are included in that rolling out or in that average.
Okay. But it's technically their first year to respond or to be aware of that, though.
Yeah. That. Mm-hmm. It's hard for us to say, Yeah. Oh, you know what I mean. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Eugene. Any other questions? No question too elementary or straightforward. We want to get them all right now. Let's start with Paul and then Peter. Paul.
Hi, thank you very much. It's Paul Lukanen with Customized Energy Solutions. So just trying to follow a few impacts. We're talking about a 12 CP. Essentially, this is becoming a 60 CP, but it will take 5 years to get there. And, you know, that average of the 60 CP, just kind of wondering if that's the or somewhat of an appropriate way to think of it, just as I try to make sense of it. And then just to clarify, if that's the case, it seems that, you know, if a customer is purchased or, you know, has invested in on-site generation, similar to some of the other questions, but particularly storage, and if I'm looking to zero out my 12 CPs kind of in year five, but I haven't had that on site for the first 4 years. Does that mean it would take me 4 years to get my average down to zero and my subsequent charges, you know, down to zero similarly? Am I following that correctly?
Yeah, I think you got it exactly right. The part you said about 60, we refer to this as 12 CP, but I think it's actually technically a 1 CP. It's a 12 times 1 CP, so I'm having trouble saying that that's 60 CP.
Can you repeat that? It's 12 times 1?
Yeah, it's actually a 1 CP. Monthly calculated. So
1 CP per month, isn't that right?
Yeah. Yeah, 1 CP per month. So we say 12 CP, but I don't, like, that sounds like it's the 12 points and peaks of the year, officially how other people refer to it. But it,
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
12, 5 CPs. That's the way you can get to 60.
Yeah, maybe. That's over 5 years, yeah.
Let's go then, Peter's question.
Thank you. It's just a comment that, you know, from company, you know, like us, Enbridge, you know, we are focusing on the ESG. And then a lot of company like Enbridge in the oil and gas, are they committing dollar to the ESG as well? So some of it is company like, you know, who focus on the ESG, looking into, you know, putting like solar panel, wind power, some of them on site, because there's, you know, advantages using the existing facility that we have. So that can be like because like what the previous gentleman said, that like if I'm building a solar panel, you know, which is and then zero to grid, because of the 5 year average, like if company like Enbridge doing those projects in the year three or four or five, like the positive impact would be significantly reduced. So I just want to comment, there's the other side of the fact that kind of preventing, you know, renewable energy development, you know, that type of development too. So it's more like a comment than question.
So Peter, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying the smoothing factor works maybe in a negative sense too, as you're doing your ESG products or projects and putting solar or wind in some of your site installations, you're going to see a lag before you see the full benefits of that. Is that fair? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Correct. Correct. And I want to, and I'm sure the AESO also know about the federal government, the Alberta government, all like the world is really moving to that ESG, reducing the carbon emission. So you it is a significant revenue, right? Like anything counts. Right now, any solar project or wind project are not that profitable. Really, we're doing this for the ESG purpose. So you further, with your scheme, you can further reduce the economics of any project. So just a comment.
Thanks for the context, Peter. Appreciate it. See one other question from Paula in the chat. Can you provide examples of those where the future demand decreases and one where the future demand increases? One more for a new generation. I think this would help.
Okay. We can provide some further examples to, the whole key of today was to make sure there wasn't any of these gaps. So it's good that we're getting that highlighted. So we can do that.
Perfect. Any other questions? Folks want to get involved, understand the tool. Not seeing anything come in. Maybe the same request. So we'll stick around just for another 5 minutes and just see if some of those questions come in. So it's 11:01 right now. Maybe we'll plan to drop off at 11:05 if there's no other questions. Thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful.
There's a question from Michael. To request information, do you just need the site IDs?
Oh, I didn't want to ask this question. We speak different languages, I think. And I wish we had one common thing. What's most helpful to me is a site location. Like I can find a lot just from your legal land description or a substation number, but I don't speak the site ID language. And we're talking about transmission connected sites as well. But yeah, I'm so sorry. I'm getting so many requests for site IDs and I can't track it down that way.
Thanks, Michael. It's like a staring contest. No one wants to leave in case they miss things, but no one wants to ask anything else. So,
at least we need elevator music or something.
Whistle while you work. Thanks, Eugene. Appreciate it.
Or Jeopardy music.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate your comment. Well, it looks like everything's kind of fully ground to a close. Nothing else that's kind of lingering in all questions. We'll call it 2 minutes early for here. Thank you, everyone, for your attention and for sticking through to ask some of your questions today and get aligned. Appreciate it. Look forward to hearing any additional comments or questions you have through LaRonda's channel of communicating on the tool as a whole. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.